learn how to feel calm and relaxed in the midst of holiday chaos. And it's hard to believe that the holidays are just around the corner. It's amazing how this year has just zoomed by. My special guest today stands as one of the world's foremost experts on meditation, yoga, and spiritual practice. In fact, he's considered the father of spiritual communities movement in the United States. Please welcome Swami Kriyananda. Hi, Swami. How are you?
Very well, thank you. You got my name slightly wrong. It's Kriyananda.
Kriyananda. Excuse me. Oh, thank you for correcting me. Kriyananda. I'll say that 10 times in my head. Thank you so much for joining me today on my show.
It's my pleasure.
Would you mind explaining to our listeners exactly what it is to be a Swami and what does Swami mean?
Well, Swami is usually somebody who is not married and has devoted his life to God. It also means spiritual teacher. And I have started a new Swami order called Naya Swami, which means you in Hindi. And that is more positive in the sense of being devoted more to what you embrace in the sense of good qualities and bliss and humility and ego-freeness and less the negative qualities of not wanting this, not wanting that, not wanting the other thing. In other words, this new order is more one that embraces the world as God.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's interesting. You studied under Yogananda in his later years.
Yes, I was with him for the last 3.5 years of his life.
Oh, that must have been amazing. Would you mind, for my listeners who don't know who Yogananda is, could you explain that to them?
Well, he was a very great teacher who came from India in 1920, and he lived in America for the next 32 years, except for 1 year in India. Passed away at the Biltmore and an introductory to a lecture on March 7th, 1952. I was there on that occasion.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Was he ill?
He was not ill, but it was amazing. He had told us the night before, "I have a big day tomorrow. Wish me luck." He knew that he was going, but we didn't know. We knew that it would come soon because he told us, "I have very little time left now."
Oh, my. My goodness, how did that feel having him gone?
Well, I tell you, it was a very great blow for me.
Mm.
I must say, in all my life, I have never met anyone so warmly human and so deeply wise. He knew my every thought. That seems incredible. But he showed it again and again that what I was thinking in my own secret mind, he knew the thoughts and he would answer those thoughts. Mm-hmm. One little time, I used to pray to him sometimes to help me to love you the way you love me, because I felt so much love coming from him. And he looked at me and he said, "How can the little cup hold the whole ocean?" But his love was, really, it was from God. It was divine.
Mm. What was it like to being with Yogananda during the last 3 years of his life?
It was a great experience, because toward the end of his life, he was more natural in this one sense, that he allowed us to see how great he where he was. He didn't bother with the niceties of self-effacement. He became very affirmative as to his state that he had attained. And he was very wise and yet wonderfully human, wonderful sense of humor, and just very compassionate toward everybody.
It's amazing to visualize, to be around someone that passionate and that good.
You know, Linda, if you want me included in this conversation, you're going to have to talk a little more loudly.
Okay, sure, certainly. My apologies. Is this better?
This is better.
Okay. In what ways do you think it may have differed from the earlier years in Yogananda's life?
Oh, in the sense that he was beautifully humble and self-effacing in a sense, although at the time that he was lecturing across the country, he was very probably the most popular speaker in the country. So you can't call a person like that self-effacing, but he never accepted credit for himself. I remember one time I was sitting at his feet. He was working on his commentaries on the Indian scripture, the Bhagavad Gita. And I was just thinking how wonderful it was to be his disciple and to have the opportunity to live with a man of true wisdom. And at the end of his editing work that he was doing right then, he asked me to help him to his feet, and he looked at me deeply in the eyes with great joy, and he said, just the bulge of the ocean. He never saw himself as separate from anything. He was a manifestation of the infinite. He never took personal credit for anything. When I saw him, his eyes were always, there was no sense of ego there. It was all sense that everything in this world is God.
Was he always like that? Do you know?
Was he what?
Was he always like that as a young boy? Was this?
Oh, yes, he was always like that. His family told me how, even as a little child, he would, in chanting the name of God, his eyes would weep tears because he felt there's this beautiful song of a Bengali saint, Amon Din Ki Obe Matara, will that day come to me, Divine Mother, when crying your name, my eyes will flow with tears. And he loved that song, because we should so love God that we can't help weeping with love. He is so close and so dear and so completely everything that we truly want in life.
That's beautiful. What did you find to be his defining message to the Western world?
He wanted us to make religion and spirituality practical. That means he also wanted us to show us how to bring spirituality into daily life. There's a principle in India. It's called in Sanskrit, Yata Dharma Sata Jaya. Where there is right action, there is success, happiness, and victory. And this is what he wanted people to understand at this time when we're facing a very severe economic crisis in the world. It would be good for people to understand this principle. I've always applied it conscientiously in my life to try to do the right thing, not the thing that would help me to win, but the thing that was in tune with truth. And I found that it always brought me out ahead.
Everything you say is just so beautiful. Thank you for sharing all this. This is great. Absolutely.
Well, this was the way he lived. I remember a beautiful occasion. He was very, in the sense, he didn't ever show himself higher than anybody else, just an ordinary human being. And he had a sort of an enjoyment. I think great saints like that enjoy little things just to sort of keep their interest tied down to this world, because otherwise they would soar up into God. And so he had a little collection of canes, and he went to a shop, and he was very nice to this man, and the man gave him a cane, and master gave him something else that was valuable. And the man said, you were a gentleman, sir. And I remember when master, I called him master, when he came home, he said, that man had such a poor rug in his shop. I think I'll buy him another rug. And this was a complete stranger. There was another beautiful occasion that a friend of mine told about. He was with him on that day. I wasn't. But they were driving along the street, and Yogananda said, stop the car, stop the car. He got out, and he walked back to sort of a junk shop, you know, paraphernalia of no particular description. And he bought a lot of unnecessary junk there. And this friend of mine said, I wonder what he's buying all this stuff for. And when he went to the counter, he and gave the woman the money she asked for these things, she burst into tears. She said, I very badly needed just this amount of money, and the store was about to come to closing time, and I despaired of ever getting it. God himself must have sent you to him. And Yogananda didn't say anything about the occasion. Of course, he never used all those things, but he knew the troubles even of complete strangers. As he was driving by, he felt it and stopped and answered it. This was the kind of extraordinary experience it was to live with him.
When did you first hear about Yogananda?
Please, Linda, talk loudly. Can you talk more loudly?
We will find out the answer to that question when we return. We do have to break for a commercial. This is Linda with South Bay Woman Magazine Hour. Welcome back. This is Linda with South Bay Woman Magazine Hour. My guest today is Swami Priyananda, and he is sharing a lovely story about when he first met Yogananda. And would you mind telling us how you when you first heard about Yogananda?
I'll be glad to tell you. I've written a book. It's called The New Path, and it's had several major awards. Mm-hmm. So you'll find it in many bookstores. The New Path, and it tells about my lifelong search for truth, and how finally it led me to the understanding that I needed God. And I didn't know what God was, and I remember asking myself that question one night. If there's a God, what must he be? And I thought, he has to be consciousness. And I am conscious because he is conscious. Therefore, I must be a manifestation, however imperfect, of his consciousness. And that my duty in life has to be to become more aware, more sensitively aware of his inner guidance. And so I decided I would give my life to seeking God. I didn't even know that anybody had ever done that. I thought maybe I was going crazy. But I thought, I just have to do this. And it was at that time that I came upon Autobiography of a Yogi and by Yogananda. And that just absolutely was a revolution. I had never dreamed that finding God could bring so much peace, so much joy, so much love. And it was the perfection of everything that I wanted. And I thought, this is the first person in my life to whom I can really trust my life and know that he will guide me in the direction I want to go. So meeting him was really, I have to say, the high point in my life. And that was in 1948, 62 years ago.
That's amazing.
I was 22 then, so I'm 84 now. I'm not hearing anything.
Can you hear me now?
I'm not hearing.
Okay. Why did you become his disciple?
What's that?
Why did you become his disciple?
Why did I become his disciple?
Yes.
Because I had never in my life imagined meeting anybody with so much wisdom and insight and knowledge as to those things in life which I wanted. I wanted the truth, and to me the truth was not a scientific truth. I tried that way. It didn't work. It wasn't a political truth. I tried that way. It too didn't work. It wasn't a musical truth. I tried that way. It didn't work. Nothing worked until I finally realized that the answer to life's burning question is God? Who are we? What is the purpose of life? Why was I born? And how can I find that complete satisfaction which my heart tells me must be my eternal destiny?
Could you share with us about your relationship with Yogananda and how he inspired you?
He didn't inspire this. I have to say this much came from me. But I found in him somebody who would realize the truth that I was seeking. And so, no, I have to say part of it came from me. I just realized that without that kind of knowledge, I would never find fulfillment. And I remembered another thing. As I was crossing the country to come to meet him, my paramount thoughts were, I want to be his disciple, and this is such a wonderful truth, I want to share it with the whole world. And I've spent my life trying to share it with as many people as possible. I've written 140 books. I've written over 400 pieces of music. I've started 8 different spiritual communities. And I've done everything I could to serve him and to make his message known in the world.
When you met Yogananda, did you automatically become his disciple, or did you have to go through a process?
There was no conflict, if that's the word you used.
No,
none in me.
A process.
A what?
A process.
The process was not like formal education. He gave me what I needed, when I needed it. For one thing, I was too intellectual, and he tried to help me to develop my heart quality and to become more of a devotee of God. I had sought God through my intellect. Most women especially, I think, would appreciate this statement that if you seek God through the heart, you'll find him more quickly and more satisfactorily. But I needed to have the answers spelled out for me mentally. And he told me, now you've done that, now seek God with your heart. And I remember how wonderful it was. Life without love is dry.
When you came to him and started studying under him, were there a group of people that were like
you? No, it wasn't like normal study. It wasn't a classroom setting. It was living with him, working with him, doing the things he told me to do, and learning to become a better human being. I know that after I'd been with him a year, he put me in charge of the other monks. So he must have felt that I was learning something. But he taught me by example, and it was never a classroom setting. I myself, with his encouragement, did set up a classroom setting for the younger monks. But with me, it was more just a matter of living that did my teaching.
When Yogananda passed, made his transition, what was your next step?
My next step was to do everything I could to help spread his work. I wanted to organize his work, to spread it. I identified his work with his organization, Self-Realization Fellowship. But I came to understand that my real loyalty was to him and to his mission. And in fact, I had a falling out with my sister disciples who were senior to me. And I've served him since then on my own, but in a very intensely personal way.
We do have to break for a commercial, and we'll be right back. This is Linda with South Bay Woman Magazine Hour. Welcome back. This is Linda with South Bay Woman Magazine Hour. We are so excited to have Swami here today. He is the last remaining direct disciple of Yogananda that's still teaching. In fact, he's authored over 140 books. And we thought this segment we would discuss his book called The Secrets of Women.
It's actually Secrets for Women. It's a series of little books, sort of gift books that I've written. It's a part of my 140 books, but these are very short little things, one for every day of the month. And the secrets of happiness, secrets of prosperity, secrets of many different things. And somebody who was out in the field selling the books said, well, there's one book that would really be popular, but I'm sure you couldn't do it. It would be Secrets for Women. And I said, well, no, I certainly don't think I'm competent to write that. And then suddenly the thought came to me, well, I can't do it, but God can do it. And I said, well, God help me. All of a sudden, I felt that I was a woman. And it was an incredible experience. And I wrote all these secrets for women. And it took me about half an hour to shake off this hypnosis that I was a woman. Anyway, it has proved to be one of my most important, best-selling secrets books. But it's not Secrets of Women, it's Secrets for Women.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to read a few of you, dear, care to hear them.
Oh, love to. Thank you.
One is, a vortex of disturbed emotions is often dissipated by a sense of humor and a light and a heartfelt laugh. Another one, transcend your personal troubles by offering solace to other troubled hearts.
Mm.
And one, let your smiles be conceived in your heart and give birth in the world through your eyes. Let your smiles be smiles of friendship, healing, and appreciation. And another, when tempted to utter caustic or sarcastic remarks, reflect that an excess of pepper can spoil a good meal. Hasty words have ruined many a precious friendship, but nothing is ever lost by kindness.
Mm.
Give others the freedom to grow at their own pace.
Mm.
And another, nurture others, and in the nurturing, you yourself will be nourished from within. A wise man once said, the channel is blessed by that which flows through it. So these, and I can read you others if you like, but they're an example of the kinds of things that there are here. 31 for 1 month.
Okay. So there's one for each day.
One for every day.
That's amazing. Why don't you read a couple more to us?
Okay. To overcome a tendency to take things too personally, refer what you hear from others to impersonal principles. Another, when we belittle others, we expose to them our own insecurity. Graciousness to all is the echo of inner victories. And the way we look at life is colored by our feelings. A negative mood can make even white look gray. A positive mood can make even a gray day beautiful. Rely less on moods. Let your feelings be impartial. Keep them centered in inner calmness. And then true beauty is a radiance outward from within. It comes from kind, happy thoughts and from virtuous qualities. Beauty is not the outer mask a person wears to please the world. It is erroneous to make a cult of youth. Every age has its intrinsic beauty.
Mm.
So those are a few. If you want more, I'll be glad to read more.
Could you share with us where we could purchase the Secrets for
Women? I should think any bookstore.
I
really don't know much about. You could go to what?
Crystal Clarity.
crystalclarity.com.
Okay.
That's the publisher.
Crystalclarity.com.
Yeah.
Oh. Would you share with us, or can you tell us, out of all the 140 books that you have authored, which one is your favorite?
Well, I've said, and I admit it's a bit of a deceit, I've said that I've written 140 books.
Mm-hmm.
In truth, 26 of them are, I was forced to get a copyright on each one of them, so I said, well, then we'll call them each one a book.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is those 26 are a set of 26 lessons, each one of them long enough to be a book. But anyway, let's say 140 books.
Okay.
That's a fair amount.
That sure is. Do you
the most recent book I wrote was a book called The Time Tunnel, and it's a book for children. And it takes children into a tunnel which takes them into timelessness. And from timelessness, they can go back and go backward and forward in time. It's really quite fun.
Mm.
The idea came to me to write it, and it just wrote itself through me. In two weeks, I had written all the 180 pages.
Mm. In two
weeks?
But it
was just sort of handed to me, as you might say, on a platter.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Do you want to share a little bit from that book, The Time Tunnel?
The Time Tunnel. I'm not sure it's yet in print.
Okay.
But it will be very soon.
Okay.
So keep it in mind. My author's name at that point is my Christian name, Donald Walters.
Okay.
It didn't seem to make sense to write a book for children by Swami Kriyananda. And actually, it's set in Romania. I was born in Romania and grew up there for the first 13 years of my life. And living there, we went out into the Transylvania forest, and we came upon this ruin. And I and my little brother went through the... We found a tunnel in this ruin and went through it into timelessness. It's really quite fun, and it gave me the opportunity to write deep truths in such a way that children, too, would enjoy them.
Mm. That sounds wonderful.
It really is quite, it was great fun.
Mm-hmm. I bet it was. What was your very first book you wrote?
What was the first book I wrote? It was, I tell you, it was not the sort of subject very many of our listeners would be interested in. But I had read an article in SPAN, which was the USIS information magazine in India.
Mm-hmm.
And it talked about how modern science describes life as being meaningless. They feel that there's no purpose in life. There's nothing right or wrong in the universe. And I thought, this is such an outrageous statement that I want to go into it and study it from inside, not from outside. It wouldn't do for me to say it's outrageous. So I spent 16 years doing deep research into what their reasoning was that could make these scientists come up with such preposterous conclusions. I had to take them seriously, but I wrote that book, and to me it's a very important one.
Mm-mm. We do have to break for a commercial. How about when we return, we'll talk about Ananda in L.A.?
Gladly.
Okay, this is Linda with South Bay Woman Magazine Hour. Welcome back. This is Linda with South Bay Woman Magazine Hour. We're here chatting today with Swami Kriyananda, and we are going to talk about Ananda Center. Is it a center? Is that how we
It's a center, and it's several centers around the city. And this Sunday at 11 o'clock at our main ashram in Los Angeles, where a number of people live, I'm going to be giving a Sunday talk and give people an opportunity to ask questions afterwards. And the address you would like to write down, it's 425 North Highland. 425 North Highland. And then in January on the 18th, I'm beginning a 6 weeks series of classes, 6 weeks to lasting success and happiness. And these are the first class series that I've given in many years. So I'm looking forward to it.
What made you decide to do this series?
Because I began to feel that the economy today demands that I address this thing in as practical as well as a spiritual way as possible.
Can you tell us how many of these centers are around?
Well, we have about 200 centers in the world, and it's about 8 communities. I would like eventually for this one here in Los Angeles to become a community, but it's just been here. I've only been here a few months this time. I used to live here. But now it's the first time in many years that I've been down here.
Okay. Where do you spend most of your time?
Well, right now I'm going to be here maybe for another year. I don't know.
Oh.
But I spend it in Italy, in America, and in India. We have communities in all of these. And I talk good Italian. So I have a center there near Assisi, where St. Francis lived. And we have quite a few people living there, about 100 people probably. And so I give lectures when I go there. But we have a going concern all the year round. And in India, we have one near New Delhi in the town of Gurgaon, and then one near Pune down in the south of India. And I built a home there, and I'll be going there. I'll have to say this as soon as I can, and that means as soon as I feel that I've completed what I had to do here in Los Angeles.
Oh, we're so blessed to have you here.
Well, certainly I have to say that it's my blessing. You know, I found that people in Los Angeles have become, yes, more worldly in a way, but there's another whole section that has become much more spiritual. And I'm very happy to see that.
Can you tell us what we can expect when we attend your center?
Well, you will find practical techniques for how to live, how to be happy, how to get along with other people, how to succeed in business, many, many different things, how to attract what you want, when you want it, and so on. It's hard to describe quickly over a brief conversation like this, but I'll give a free lecture to begin with, and people can come to that and get an idea of what they might expect.
Do you always begin and end your classes with a meditation?
No. I may or I may not, depending on the ambience and the circumstances. People who are not ready to meditate, I have to try to make them ready for it before they meditate. And I mean, we also sing chants, and I have written quite a lot of songs in English, and they give deep meaning. So it's a variety show, you might say, in that we have music not dance, but song and talk.
That sounds wonderful. It sounds very inviting and very enlightening.
Well, I do hope you come.
Oh, I would love to. It sounds wonderful. I see that at your centers you offer private instruction.
We offer what?
Private instruction.
Yes, yes. Not I personally, but I've had people. I built the first Ananda community more than 40 years ago, and so we have very competent teachers. And they all help.
Okay. You also have something called, I hope I'm saying it right, Kriya Yoga?
Yes, yes. We also have initiations into Kriya Yoga. There's a process of preparation for receiving that kind of initiation. And we go through that too.
Okay. And you will currently be at the Los Angeles Center for the next up to a year.
Yes. And the new path, I do highly recommend to people because it will describe my journey and why I took it, and what it was like to live with Yogananda. Nobody has ever written about what it was like to live with him as much as I have, for making the reader feel that he himself was there.
And the name of the book again is The New
Path. The New Path.
The New Path.
Yes.
Mm.
And it really, if I must say so, I'm absolutely thrilled with it. And it has had several awards, big awards, the Eric Hoffer Award, the USA Award, and the best spiritual category.
You have mentioned that the goal of life is this. Can you tell us how one gets there from here?
How one gets where?
To the goal of life, bliss.
Oh, you have to love God. In the end, it's His grace. You know, people think that yoga is a way of forcing God to come to you. No, it's opening the curtain so that His sunlight can come into the room. But finally, everything comes down to His grace. There's nothing wrong with the Christian teaching. Everything finally is grace.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, we do have to break for a commercial. We'll be right back. This is Linda with South Bay Woman Magazine Hour. Welcome back. This is Linda with South Bay Woman Magazine Hour. Oh, thank you, Swami, so much.
It's been my pleasure.
Oh.
And you know, we have a center in Torrance.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Okay.
And if people were to write to AnandaLA.org, they would be able to get that information. Otherwise, I'm going to be giving these 6 weeks to lasting success and happiness. The introductory talk will be on January 18th. And this coming Sunday at 11 o'clock, I'll have at 425 North Highland, I'll have a talk then, and people will ask questions.
Oh, that's wonderful. Would that be on your website, too?
It will be on our website, too.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again so much for being my guest.
It's been my honor and my pleasure.
And everybody out there, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful week. Remember, you're worth it.